You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Matt Chandler, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dehati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey there, welcome to the New Churches Podcast. My name is Clint Clifton, and today I'm joined by Noah Oldham once again. Noah is a leader in the Send Network, and he's the lead pastor of August Gate Church in St. Louis, Missouri, a church that he founded, and he lives there in St. Louis with his family. So Noah, welcome to the New Churches Podcast.
Hey, good to be back, Clint.
Yes. So today we're going to talk about preaching to small crowds.
Yeah.
We've both done that.
We have. Yes, yes. I would say most of my preaching has happened among small crowds.
Yeah. Well, let's define small crowds. Let's say like less than 100, right?
Okay, yeah, okay. Sure.
We'll say if you're preaching to less than 100, I think it's even more complicated when you get below like 30 or whatever.
Yeah.
It feels small groupish, but but we're going to talk about some of the nuances of preaching to small crowds. And before I do that, I want to let you know about an article that we posted over on newchurches.com. It's called 10 Must-See Prospectus Samples. And a lot of you out there are working, you're ramping up to your new church. Maybe you are in a residency right now, and maybe in that residency you're charged with the task of creating a church planting prospectus, and you're deep into the weeds of that. I have collected it's 10 of my favorite church planting prospectuses that I've seen over the years. And we put them in this article, 10 Must-See Prospectuses. And I think you should go look at it because you're going to see some incredible creativity and great communication, beautiful aesthetics in these prospectuses. And these prospectuses become really helpful tools as you go out there and try to communicate the vision for your new church. So go on over to newchurches.com and check out the article, 10 Must-See Prospectus Samples. So Noah, on the subject of public speaking, the reality is that there's a huge phobia around public speaking for the population at large. National Institute of Mental Health reports that public speaking anxiety affects about 73% of the population. In fact, it said that more people fear public speaking than fear death. It's the number one phobia, which means you'd rather be in the grave than giving the eulogy at the graveside.
Wow.
Which is kind of crazy to consider.
That is. Yeah. It's mind-blowing to me.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And that's really because public speaking has this underlying fear of judgment and negative evaluation by others. And we really value what our peers think about us.
Yeah.
And so public speaking is difficult. Yet when I think about church planting, I think of a group of people who think they're great at public speaking, large and small crowds, and they kind of dive into it with a lot of confidence. And so we're going to talk today particularly about the nuances of being being a communicator in a church plant, usually with a really small group of people. So I've always found it much more difficult to effectively communicate to small crowds than to preach to larger crowds. Is that true for you, and why do you think that is?
It is true for me. I didn't know it was true for me necessarily until several years ago. My father-in-law, a 30-plus year Southern Baptist pastor, has preached thousands and thousands of sermons on the mission field in his church, on and on. He just came to me one day and said, "No, I've noticed that the larger the crowd gets, the better you get as a communicator. You seem to come out and come alive, and your giftings come out." I think that just as we're all gifted in different ways, Ephesians 4, we'll talk about some of those different giftings, as well as other places in the New Testament talking about spiritual gifts, I believe there are different people that are built to communicate more effectively in different situations. Mm. And I think my style, which is more prophetic leaning and teaching leaning, I think that allows me that combination in a larger group to keep attention, move a certain direction. But the smaller the group gets for me, the more my brain focuses in on is this person, that person, that person. Are they locked in?
Yeah.
Is the light bulb coming on? The group is large enough, I don't have the ability to do that as much. But then if it's smaller, I really, really fixate on it. And it's a struggle. And it troubles me while I'm trying to preach.
Yeah. I have the same experience. Let's talk about the subtle nuance and the difference in knowing the people you're speaking to and not knowing the people you're speaking to. So I think for me, the layered difficulty is like a small crowd with people I know is the hardest group for mm-hmm. me to communicate with. And if you make them teenagers, it gets even more right. difficult. So for you, does the fact that you know the people or don't know the people, does that affect how well you communicate with them?
I think it affects the way I communicate with mm-hmm. them. If it's a completely anonymous room, but I know things about them, I know where I want to help lead them in what God is calling me to do mm-hmm. in that moment. I love, though, to speak with people that I do know.
Yeah.
It's much more effective for me. It allows me for that anxiety to come down because
yeah.
I know what they're needing, what they're expecting, what they yeah. want. I know that in my church every week, they're coming hungry, ready for me to give them the exposition of the word.
Yeah.
I don't have to try to entertain. I give them the word and help them to believe
yeah.
it.
I think in some ways my anxiety goes up when I know the people and when we're in a small crowd, but I actually, I really love the ability to use people, you know, in the crowd as an example yeah. and to kind of speak specifically. You talked about this, like, I don't know if it's before we got on the podcast or not, but you talked about this like a simultaneous track running in your mind where you're having thoughts, you're thinking yeah. about things that are going on in people's lives and situations, how somebody might receive something that you say, an individual circumstance for sometimes a single person. You
yeah.
know, we talk often to married people and I think, oh, how's a single person receiving this? Or we yeah. talk to Christians and there's some non-Christians sitting there.
Yeah.
And all those things, you know, take up brain bandwidth while you're preaching. So it adds to the difficulty.
It does. Yeah, one of the things that I've noticed in preaching to smaller groups that I do know is I don't want to waste anybody's time.
Yeah.
Whether it be a staff meeting or mm-hmm. it be a sermon on Sunday, God has given me the opportunity to have this platform. I don't want to waste anybody's time. I think the smaller the group is, the more you notice people looking at their phones, people spacing yeah. out, people getting up to go to the bathroom, and those kind of things are all, they call the speaker to start asking questions like, am I effective right yeah. now?
So when August Gate got started, how big was the crowd in the beginning? Was it pretty small?
It was very small. Yeah. We launched with a launch service of over 200. It was we over the limits of space in the room, according yeah. to the fire marshal. And the next week and for the next few months, it was about 30 people.
Wow.
And it was really small. And it was there's some dark, cold weeks.
That's extreme, man. I always tell people you should expect 50%, you know, yeah. cut it, but that's dramatic.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. He did some really cool stuff, with that caused us to say, we weren't here to reach a bunch of Christians that would come and show up to a show. Mm. And so let's pray that God will fill up these seats. And we did that twice and God did. But those early months was casting vision for a small group of people that I knew intimately. And so it gave me an opportunity to really grow as a speaker for small groups.
Yeah. And how much preaching experience had you had when August Gate launched? Were you a seasoned preacher at that point?
I was as seasoned as you can be, I think, when you're 26. I started preaching at 19. I preached my first sermon. And then from 21 on, I preached almost every week for all those years. And so preached a lot of sermons. Most of them weren't very good, though.
Yeah. No, that's for sure. But there is something about frequency and repetition
yes.
and experience and reps that really makes you more comfortable in front of people, makes you a better communicator. I mean, you learn things inevitably unless you're just not paying attention at all.
Mm-hmm.
So presumably the crowd was pretty small, as you said. And what are some of the practices that you formed preaching to a small crowd over and over again that became part of your toolbox, so to speak, as a speaker? Anything come to mind?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few things that come to mind. I think one of the first ones was learning to preach to who was there, mm-hmm. that God had put people there on purpose that needed to learn yeah. the word. And as we did that, I began to, as in my sermon prep, begin to think of those people. I know some pastors that make a running list of people, maybe choose five every month,
yeah.
and they have them hanging on their whiteboard or something to say, I want to make sure that I'm preaching to these five mm-hmm. people. And they're in different demographics and different
wow.
life situations. I was able to do that in a real way for my entire launch team.
Yeah.
Knowing where they're at in life, knowing what we're trying to build together, I'm able to preach to their moment in life.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And so that's something I've carried over as the church has gotten larger.
Yeah. One thing that was true for me when I was preaching to a small crowd, and I, unlike you, I didn't have virtually any preaching experience. I'd gone to Bible college and
wow.
got a music degree. And then I went to a seminary and got a music degree. And then I decided to go plant a church at
yeah.
like 24 years old. And so it wasn't the greatest decision. But I was learning to preach
yeah.
along the way. Now I'd been in front of people a lot doing music, but it's different. It's mm-hmm. it's pretty different. So my comfort level, and I wasn't anxious. I didn't have anxiety in front of people, but I still wasn't a very good communicator, a very good orator. And so one of the things that
that I felt like really helped was to imagine, you know, you talked about the personalization of the communication, to imagine that I was talking to individual people and to have as much as possible a lot of feedback in the sermon to make it sort of a small group like situation. Not so everybody had open season, can kind of say whatever they want, but that there was an there were expected points in the communication where there was a break and some communication when the crowd was really small, like 15, 20, 30 people. That was really effective. And for the first, until our church got to about 100 or maybe 75, we were doing Q&A after the services.
Okay.
And so we would, you know, we'd have the sermon and then we'd say, any questions, comments? And some weeks there was nothing. Some weeks it was really robust discussion.
Yeah.
Some of the most memorable moments in the life of our church, especially in those early days, came from those Q&A moments. And I would say as a form of advice for any young preachers, if you're having trouble with the small crowd thing, I would encourage you to try a Q&A after the service and see how it goes. Now, you got to be on your toes because you're going to ask some crazy questions.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
especially if you're working with a mostly unchurched crowd.
For sure.
Yeah. I remember this one particular week. This is off subject a little bit, but this one particular week I preached about forgiveness. And I essentially said, you know, it's your responsibility to forgive as Christ has forgiven you. And a woman stood up after the service. It was a visitor. And she said, I was raped and you're telling me I'm supposed to forgive the person who raped me.
Wow.
Said that in front of the crowd. And I had to say, yeah, based on this text, I think you are supposed to. And it was a tense moment
in
the life of our church. But ultimately good. It opened up a great conversation and I think people hearing me respond gently to somebody who responded with hostility teaches a whole bunch of things pastorally. It was just really, really good. So I think there are some advantages to small crowds is what I'm saying
that
you don't get with larger crowds. Mm-hmm. So, hey, I listened to a podcast about preaching to small crowds a few years ago, and they encouraged the podcast host was encouraging you to just sort of simply ignore the crowd size and preach as if the group were large. Is that good advice?
I don't know that I could do that.
Yeah.
Here's one of the things. I come from a charismatic background. And what I've noticed is some guys in the stream that I grew up in, a certain distinct part of the stream, they tend to become actors when they get on a stage. The voice gets totally different than the normal voice. Now, I know we all have a preacher voice, just like we all have a telephone voice.
Right.
There's some of that we have to do. But they become a different person.
Yeah.
And I think it's more distinct when they're in a small church. There's a room full of 10 people, and they're kind of seem like an actor on a stage. It feels... just doesn't feel genuine.
Yeah.
And so I would say, for me, I don't think that it'd be possible for me. I think that I need to recognize the kind of crowd in front of me. I think Jesus did that. When Jesus had a smaller crowd of people, he spoke a certain way. You see the Sermon on the Mount with all these people, he spoke a certain way. He didn't get as down in the weeds as he might get with specificity when he had the 12 or smaller group around him. So I think the crowd often lends itself to different strategy. And so, I don't know, maybe that person who said that, that's really worked for them.
Yeah.
Hasn't worked for me.
Well, I don't even know how you'd really realistically do that.
Yeah.
I mean, you're obvious. You'd have to kind of be just, you know, you would have to be just not paying attention to the
crowd. One of the things I like about bigger crowds, bigger congregations, bigger events, is there's an energy that's in the room.
Yeah.
When you are a preacher in a smaller crowd, it's almost, you either turn down the energy or you have to manufacture it.
Right.
And I don't want to manufacture energy.
I don't either.
I don't want to do that. And so I think that, hey, if God has ordained this crowd to be this size, then I think he wants to do something in this size of crowd.
Wow.
So let's ask him to do that.
That's good. I remember, you know, again, I told you I was 24 when I started, and I expected the church to grow a lot larger than it did, a lot faster. And so I was constantly disappointed in the people that God had given me, you know, which was terrible leadership.
Sure.
I remember going to talking to a pastor mentor one time about it, and he gave me this, like, terrible advice. He said, sometimes you just got to fake it till you make it, you know? He was like, I look back on that, and I was like, yeah, okay, I'm going to do that. So I'm going to walk in and be optimistic. And I was sort of, you know, going against sort of what my consciousness and my heart was saying and doing what I knew to be right, based on his advice. But it would have been so much better for me to genuinely look at those people that were in front of me and say, these are souls Jesus died for. He's given them to us for such time as this. In his sovereignty, this is his purpose and plan for right now. And I think that would have made, my perspective would have been a whole lot different in the way I interacted with
them. Think about Peter. I mean, Peter gets reinstated by Jesus there at that breakfast meeting. He says, go feed my sheep.
Yeah.
And then the first opportunity he has to feed the sheep with preaching is thousands of people. Mm. I doubt Peter had crowds like that for the rest of his life. He had some time in the temple early on that first year before persecution broke out. But I bet most of his communication feeding sheep were small groups in homes where it was illegal or very dangerous. Mm. And so I think no matter what circumstance, feed the sheep.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you think of any other opportunities that we could point out to those who are listening that are opportunities that exist in small crowds of maybe less than 100 that don't exist when the church gets larger? I mean, we talked about knowing the people you're interacting with. We talked about the ability to get some feedback from. Anything else come to mind?
I love what you said about the being able to have a little more of a dialogue or have that Q&A. We've never done that, but what we've always done is we've taken our sermons on Sunday, our gathering into our small groups. It's like a breathing in and breathing out. We say that our small groups are an experiment in biblical community where we take the solid of God's truth and we mix it into the liquid of real life.
Wow.
And out of that comes this experiment. And so what we always do is say what was preached on Sunday is what we're studying in our small groups. And when you have a smaller church, there's an opportunity, you know people, and there's less anonymity. A preacher's preaching to real situations that are going on, and other people know about it. It's not like thousands of people and you end up in a random small group and no one knows that that applies to your life unless you tell them. I think there's just an opportunity for intimacy. There's also an opportunity for community.
Yeah.
If you are a church that is smaller and maybe you're even more community-focused, those messages are toward those people in that place at that time instead of this more nebulous principle applying, which is great.
Yeah.
But I think there's an intimacy that comes when those that principle and application is very specific.
Yeah, man, that's amazing. I've heard our church has never done this, but I've heard of churches using their small group time to do feedback on the teaching, the Sunday teaching. But I've never really thought about it as very similar to what we did in a Q&A after a service. I mean, really, you're giving the congregation an opportunity to interact with each other about the word, which I think would further solidify that teaching in their hearts. Man, that's really good. That struck me in a new way. Last thing I want to mention here, and this is maybe slightly off topic too, but there's a whole lot of online preaching happening right now. I think this is our punishment for making fun of televangelists for all these years, you know, that we all became televangelists of sorts because of the pandemic. Is there anything specific that you've learned? I think you've probably been preaching to a camera a lot more than you ever thought you would be doing.
Did for a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, and it's all a part of our lives in a way that it wasn't before. And so anything you've learned about preaching to a camera that's worth mentioning?
I think a couple things. Number one is I don't want to do it very much. I believe with Martin Lloyd-Jones, he said that that preaching is a word from God for a people in a moment. And I want to be with people. I want to see their eyes. I want to see the lights come on. That preaching isn't about me communicating a message. It's about people hearing the message that's communicated from God. And so I want to be a part of that. And you lose something when you don't get to see the lights come on.
Yeah.
And I missed that for those few months that we were doing mostly online. But I would say it also gave me the urgency that by whatever means, the word would run swiftly and win the race, as Paul prayed.
Yeah.
And so it just gave me a new sense of, hey, we've got to be open-handed in situations and say, Jesus, what are you doing? What's the strategy for getting your word out? Let us do that with a clear conscience and with a heart full of faith, and you're going to give us opportunity. So I would just tell people, and when it comes to gifts, it comes to opportunities, it comes to circumstances, is preach the word in season and out of season. Yeah. If that means technology, great. If it doesn't, great. Even when it comes to your giftings, like don't despise, not just small beginnings, don't despise small crowds.
Yeah.
Like the world was turned upside down by a small crowd.
That's true.
A church of 120 people lit this thing on fire.
Yeah, that's right.
And so if your church is there or even getting close to that, God can do so many tremendous things through that.
Yeah, I think in some ways, too, it's helpful for me to remember that in a sense, Jesus pastored a small church that multiplied a lot. Like he gathered people together. He taught them the word. He was the word. He broke bread with them. He equipped them for mission and sent them on mission. That's so similar to what it is you and I are trying to do. And for us to despise, as you said, the small crowds. I went through the internship at Capitol Hill years ago, and I remember Mark telling us of a pastor an older pastor who received a letter from a younger pastor lamenting the small size of his congregation. His response via letter to this younger pastor was, I promise you that on the day of judgment, you'll think you had quite enough. And and that's something important to keep in mind, that those are souls. Those are Jesus's people and whatever he's given to us. And I don't know about you, Noah, but my capacity to lead people has grown with, you know, it like parallel to the growth of the church. Mm. The church never outgrew my capacity to lead. And I think that was the mistake I made. I thought I'll just go out there and it'll grow, and then I'll learn to be a good leader of that large crowd of people. There's a catch in there. It just doesn't grow past your capacity, especially in church planting. I think sometimes you might can do that in an existing church, but in church planting, it doesn't.
Yeah,
so it's a great conversation. Thanks, Noah. So, call to action here before we step away. You heard us mention at the beginning of the episode, church planting residencies, and that might have piqued your interest. Maybe you don't know what a residency is, or maybe you're not involved in a residency. Church planting residency is when a group of aspiring missional leaders come together under the guidance of an experienced church planting leader to learn about the process of church planting, so they could become better equipped for the work that God has for them in the future. There are residencies all over the country, probably near where you live. And so if you'd like to learn more about residencies in your area, maybe in your state or in your city, you can visit nam.net/residencies and find a residency near you.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.